lunch. I mean, it's great.
Shocker.
I first came into contact with Nolan probably 12, 13 years ago. This is one of the young men that used to come out and help with the brown bag lunches that we used to serve at Huddles. And as we left the praying room, he claimed that there may be a file for carpal tunnel from running the zippers or trying to close the Ziploc tabs, and saying something that affected your curveball or something.
So
but let's bow our heads. If you would please shut your phone off and mute, but let's bow our heads, bless this meal and this talk. Father, we just thank you for the food that you've provided. I just thank you that people are willing to step up and just want to feed these people so that they can come and hear a good message and not have to worry too much about whether their belly is filled or not. Father, I just thank you for Nolan. Father, he's an exciting young man to be around, has a huge future ahead of him. I just ask that this message that you pour through him today and just affect the men of this room and of this community. In Jesus' name, amen.
What's going on, guys? So I had spoken here once before, a couple, 3 years ago. So what I'm going to do after I'm done with this is I'm going to go back. I'm going to watch the film. I'm going to critique myself from the last one and see the good and the bad. But like Stan said, my name is Nolan Sanborn. I'm from Kokomo, Indiana. Grew up here at Kokomo High School. Son of Dick and Crystal Sanborn. I am currently a professional baseball player in the Chicago White Sox organization, so I've been in AA the past 2 years, so still trying to make that push to the big leagues. Hopefully this next year things will shake. But at the end, I'm going to leave a few minutes for questions, a quick Q&A, just in case anybody is interested in anything baseball or faith-wise or anything in between. But yeah, I played in Birmingham, Alabama this past year, which is AA for the Chicago White Sox, and AAA's in Charlotte, and then the big leagues in Chicago. And so basically it's in the Southern League, which is you're playing in places like Jackson, Mississippi, Biloxi, Mississippi. So basically cities you never heard of where nobody knows your name. That's basically what I'm doing. It's almost funny because I have a couple buddies. One of my friends from Pro Ball, he's got this t-shirt. Everyone thinks the professional baseball lifestyle is so glamorous. The big leagues is. But the minor leagues is funny. He has this t-shirt. It's got like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on it. And on the back it says, if you don't like it, play better. So that's basically what everyone's just eating it the whole time. And, you know, all the minor leagues is you're just wearing it. You're sleeping on air mattresses, you know, four guys to an apartment. I mean, it's you definitely get to bond with your teammates for sure. It's the money part is almost as bad as where so we play five games at home and then five games on the road, and you get meal money when you go on the road for 5 days, which is $125. Well, you have to pay clubhouse dues at home and on the road, and that's $60 plus a $10 tip. So $70 at home, $70 on the road. So that's $140. You're only getting $125 of meal money. So before you even step on the bus, you're in the hole $15. So I'm going to take an offering at the end of this. In case anybody's interested. No, I'm just kidding. But in all seriousness, I really haven't done anything of any significant importance in my life other than try to throw a baseball over a plate. And I still haven't figured that part out. So I'm working on that. You know, what I'm going to talk about today is the definition of truth. And the definition of truth is in accordance of fact or reality. So that's kind of what I want to touch on is, first, I want to be truthful. Growing up my whole life, my grandpa Dick has always said it takes a lifetime to build a reputation and only 20 minutes to tear it down. And I'm sure a lot of people know that. I mean, it's very obvious. But I want to be transparent. I think truthfulness and transparency, they both come hand in hand. You know, you can't have one without the other. And I want to be real. You know, when I open up and I want to talk about some of my flaws as a person and some things that I've done wrong and I do wrong in my life that I still haven't figured out yet. But I want to talk about those things not because I want sympathy or empathy for anyone, But in order to grow spiritually, you have to first accept the flaws and the things that that you can change, but those are your shortcomings. So, and like I said, so, you know, there's so many guys in this room that I know that are much more qualified to be up here than I am. I'm definitely thankful to be here, so thanks for having me. So, has anybody ever watched a baseball game? Anybody? All right, has anyone ever seen one of the star players, the millionaires out there, make an error? And has anyone ever said, I could have made that play? I mean, come on, you know? I think all of us have. It's almost funny. Back when I was in college at Arkansas, we went to, you know, the football games every weekend, and there was a play where the quarterback threw the ball to the receiver, and it hit him right in the back. Like, he just didn't. They must have ran the wrong route or something. And the guy in the seats is like, you've got to turn around. You've just got to. And it's like, duh. It's the same as when I'm on the mound and I just walk a guy and you hear a guy, come on, man, throw a strike. And I'm stepping off. I'm like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. Thanks, chief. You know, you know, you think that every big leaguer, would be able to make every play every single time or get a hit every single at bat. You know, you think that's what, that's what the minor leagues are designed to do, to get rid of the flaws, to get rid of the errors and the mistakes. You know, you think that's what even the church is supposed to do, to get rid of the sin. Well, you think it's what it's supposed to do is to make you perfect. Well, Major League Baseball players, the best players in the world, still make mistakes. So even though their intentions are good, even though they work hard and they try as hard as they can every single game, they still come short and they still make errors. So in Romans 3:23, it says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So I think about that, and then I ask myself, how can they call themselves big leaguers, the best in the world, when they constantly make mistakes? So then I look in the mirror and I ask myself, then how can I call myself a Christian when I constantly sin? So I kind of turn that on myself and I think about that. So I have a quick history lesson for you. The first Christians did not create this title for themselves. It was actually given to them by pagans who observed the way Jesus' followers behaved and recognized the similarities between what they were doing and what Jesus did. And so they call these Jesus Christ followers Christians. It was a way to identify them and talk about them. So as I was reading this past week, I almost wondered to myself, I said, if the watching world started giving titles and nicknames to those who proclaim to follow Jesus today, I wonder what sort of titles that they would give us. I don't know the answer, but I doubt it would be Christian. And I'm not coming to anybody. My actions do not reflect all the time. You know, I'd probably even go as far to say that my actions don't reflect Christ most of the time, but I still refer to myself as a Christian. So the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 10:23-24, I have the right to do anything, but not everything is beneficial. I have the right to do anything, but not everything is constructive. No one should seek their own good, but for the good of others. So I read that verse, and I think, well, if I have the right to do anything, good, bad, or indifferent, then the consequences of my actions are mine alone, good, bad, or indifferent. I love that verse just because it puts the ball in my court. You know, I reap what I sow. The consequences of the actions are mine. You know, I tell myself that I've worked hard for 10 years, you know, before any of it ever paid off. Nobody had any idea what I had to trade off to get to where I am. So why should I have compassion or humility or kindness for people who didn't sacrifice near as much as what I did or take the risk that I did? That's when greed, pridefulness, arrogance, a loss of self-control, that stuff begins to set into my heart because I start thinking, you know what, I've earned this. I deserve this. I did this myself. So I begin to feel so high and mighty because I believe that I'm owed from God for my toil and my hard work. You know, I tell myself, I'm a professional baseball player. People looked up to me. They think I have it figured out. I'm very attractive and good looking. No, I'm just kidding. In seriousness, you know, my heart has become uncompassionate. It's not forgiving, and it's definitely not understanding. It's become as hard as a rock, and I can completely submerge in my own selfishness. It's the problem is I take that verse out of context, and I don't listen to the part that I want to hear. And I forget that it also says that not everything is beneficial or constructive. Well, you know what else it says in the Bible? It says, Colossians 3:12, Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. So even though I was following the Bible, quote unquote, I couldn't have been farther from the truth, from the reality of what I was trying to do. So when you look up the true definition of sin, the definition says, sin is doing what is wrong or not doing what is right and according to God's rules. So in First John 3:4, it says, everyone who sins breaks the law. In fact, sin is lawlessness. So if God says, don't lie, and you lie, then you've sinned. If he says, do not steal, and you steal, then you've also sinned. So according to God, sin separates you from him. I had a conversation with my dad a while back, maybe a year ago or so, but I asked him, I said, how could God still love us even though we sin, which is a deliberate turn from God? And his response was something I actually experienced a lot in high school, which was grace. The definition of grace is God's overwhelming desire to treat us as if we had never sinned because of his love for us. So it's overwhelmingly comforting to know that no matter what, through thick and thin, God is going to love us. So our lustful desires do not stop him. Our addictions do not stop him. Our prideful, arrogant, selfish attitudes do not stop him either. Like in one of my favorite Crash and Crown songs, it says, who am I that the Lord of all the earth would care to know my name and would care to feel my hurt? We're waves that crash in the ocean, we're vapors in the wind, yet he still wants a personal relationship with each and every one of us. It's pretty humbling to think about that. And I had a coach last season. His name was Britt Burns. He was a big leaguer with the Tigers and a couple other teams, but one thing that he said, the quote that he said about his favorite thing was coaching. He said, my favorite part about being a coach is that I get to know each player on a deeper level. I get to know who they are and what makes them tick. So when I go out to a mound visit, I know whether I need to fire them up or calm them down. I don't coach by the herd, I coach by the sheep. And I think that's kind of how God views each and every one of us too. He made us all unique in our own individual way. And that's what makes us, unfortunately, lovable and unlovable as well. But there's comfort in that love. There's comfort in that uniqueness. But there's also responsibility that comes with that love. And the responsibility is that if we want to tell people that we're followers of Jesus, then we do it by loving them, just as he loves us, which is unconditionally. And that's what godly love is. So in 1 John 4:7-8 says, let us love one another, for love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. And the one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. Which is a little bit of a geometry lesson there, but you get it. So the question is, where do we go from here? What do we do? What's next? For someone like me who has so many flaws, who's messed up so many times, so many chinks in the armor, so many sins, it's difficult to count. You know, what's our next move? What do we do next? Where do we go? Who do we talk to? Well, in baseball, we always say the most important pitch isn't the 1-1 count or the 0-2 pitch, but it's the next pitch. It's not the actual ball that you throw. It's the next pitch that's the most important pitch. So it doesn't matter what you do or what you've done or who you've been. Because, you know, if you think you've blown God's plan for your life, rest in this, you're not that powerful. You're not strong enough. So like the Bible says, you can do anything you want. So why not make it beneficial? Why not make it constructive? Why not start becoming the man that you want to be for the rest of your life? Why not start becoming the man that your children's going to look up to and your wife looks up to? You know, like I said in the beginning, you know, I'm in no way, shape, or form an expert on any of this. I definitely don't feel qualified to be up here. But at the end of the day, I know that from experience that over time, you know, the more and more that I practice, the better that I get. The more I seek out people who know what they're doing, mentors in my life, mentors in your life, people that have been there, that have done that, that are good at what they do. You get in their back pocket and you ask them, you know, how can I become like you? What can I do to be more like you? First of all, that's the Bible. But also, too, there's people on earth that actually have an idea of what's going on, too. But Like I said, I would encourage you, you know, maybe take a walk, take a chance. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the most important pitch is the next pitch. The most important move of your life is the next move. So challenge yourself. You know, what can I do that's next? What's going to be the next move in my life that's going to prepare me and get me ready for the next possible opportunity to speak to somebody or to be a good leader or a mentor to somebody else who, and like I said, I don't feel like I'm qualified, but, you know, even when it comes to baseball, you know, when I was in high school, you know, doing lessons with high school kids, I'm not an expert on this stuff, on baseball stuff, but I definitely know more than what I did back when I was in high school. So guys that are older than me, people that I can put my get in their back pocket and listen to them, what they're doing and what they do to become successful, I'm just going to copy that, because if they're doing something right, why don't I just do exactly what they're doing and I'll become exactly how they are today. So that's kind of my approach on that. But like I said, I'm just thankful to be here again. I wish I was a little more qualified, like I said before, but I'm definitely thankful, and I appreciate you guys having me. So let me pray. Jesus, thank you for today. I'm thankful that I get an opportunity to be up here speaking to these men. And thank you that you give me incredible mentors and incredible leaders in my life that I can follow, and people that have made great decisions that know the way, they know the truth, they know the light, and it gives me an easy way to follow. I pray that all these men in here today seek out people that know what they're doing, people that are experts in their field. I pray that you protect each and every one of us. I pray that as we go forward, you prepare a successful 2017, and you just continue to watch over us. In your name I pray, amen. Thank you. So like I said, if anybody has, you know, a quick 5-minute Q&A, I'm not that cool or popular, but if anybody has any questions, you know, shoot away. Yes, sir. Like I said earlier, do you want the right answer or the politically correct answer? No, I definitely, my Grandpa Dick and my Grandpa Mac are incredible leaders and incredible mentors to me. I know that when it comes to baseball, when it comes to life, I've, I'm not going to say I worship the ground they walked on, but I've definitely looked up to them more than just about anyone else in my life. So. I've never been more thankful for individuals than my two grandparents, that's for sure. Yes, sir.
I think a lot of your dad, what
do you think? Like I said earlier, I said, you know, thankfully in high school I experienced a lot of this, which was grace from my dad, especially when he would look at grades online. That didn't go over well most of the time. No, the same with my grandparents. My dad has been an incredible leader. He's been an incredible mentor, not just to me, but I can, you know, too many people to count on one hand how many people he's impacted in his life. The leader that he is in the church and the leader he is in the community, it makes me very thankful to be a part of the Sanborn family, because the people that I've been surrounded with. And I always tell my grandpa this, you know, when it comes to my baseball career, you know, I'm just the one that's fortunate enough to live it out. I've had so many great, like I said, mentors and leaders and people that have surrounded me and moved me in the correct direction in the right way. So I'm just the one that's fortunate enough to be living it out. I mean, this is a total team effort of me being where I am. So I'm thankful to be the one living out, but it's I cannot take almost any other credit, that's for sure. Flip coin. Oh, yeah. Anybody, any other people want to, like, compliments either? I'll raise your hand. I'll compliment you, too. No, but also with my mom, too. I mean, she, like you said, at the Jackrabbits game, it's almost hilarious. We almost joke that she's, like, almost too qualified for any baseball position, because her entire life she's been like the taxi cab service for us, going from the baseball field, and then she goes home, and then she's the clubhouse manager because she cleans our uniforms, she makes the food, and then she cleans it up. I mean, she's also too, she's an incredible leader and a person that I aspire to be more like. I'm just very thankful that, like I said, to have the parents that I do, to lead me and guide me. It's almost like I didn't have to create any path for myself. They created it. I just walked down the road. So I've had great, like I said, my mother, my dad, my grandparents. I mean, it's just, it's a complete team effort. I'm just very thankful. Yes, sir. Well, I'd say my best pitch is probably my fastball, just like any other pitcher, but I got a fastball, a curveball, and a slider and changeup, and feel pretty confident throwing all four pitches in any count. It just depends on the hitter, the situation, depending on how late in the game it is, depending on, it just dictates the pitch that I'm going to throw, but for the most part, if you hit a home run off me, expect one in the middle of the back your next AB. Because it's coming. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My most memorable experience in pro baseball, I mean, that's a good question. I've one of my favorite parts about being a professional is getting a chance to meet guys from literally all over the world. I played guys in Australia, guys in the Dominican, Venezuela, you know, Costa Rica, all these different, and then all, you know, all throughout the country too. So I've definitely got a chance to experience a lot of different cultures, which I feel like gives me, makes me a little more well-rounded as a person by meeting these guys. So far, I would say that my biggest, I don't even know if it'd be accomplishment or biggest thrill as a professional. I would say probably one of the coolest moments was, it sounds kind of cliche, or not even cliche, but just weird, but I was playing in low A a couple, 3 years ago, and we were playing in Dayton. My grandparents and my parents came to watch me pitch in this game, and which was a couple hours away, and this night I wasn't gonna pitch this night. Like, I was down, I'd throw the night before. Well, we're winning the game like 7-2 or something, and it's the ninth inning. The guy that's closing the game walks four guys in a row. They say, "Samburn, get up. You're going in the game." And I throw like five pitches in the bullpen, and I run out to the game. And we're, you know, we're winning now 7-4. Well, I get a 3-1 count, and this guy just rocks a grand slam off me, walk off. And I'm like, you know, that stinks. So I just walk off the field like, you know, we just blew a 7-2 lead. Well, after the game, my grandma and grandpa are there. We're just talking. They're like, "Oh, man, we're so sorry." And I'm just like, you know what? It is what it is. I mean, the scoreboard's off now. We're going to come out here and play tomorrow. I mean, you know, it's just one AB. It was one pitch. And like I was saying, you know, it's just, now it's the next pitch. You know, how can I make that not happen again? Or, you know, far off than not, you know. I like broken back ground balls a lot better than walk-off grand slams. But at the end of the day, you know, it's going to happen. It'll happen again. One of my favorite coaches was Bob Welch. He pitched in the big leagues for a while, but unfortunately he died a couple years ago. But one of my favorite quotes from him is, he goes, he says, "Hey, man, if you give up a lot of home runs in your career, that means you played a long time." So, so as long as you're giving up home runs, I mean, it's not too far in between. I mean, it means you're still playing, so you're still around. So I definitely feel that was it's kind of a weird favorite moment, but it's one of my favorites because, you know, my parents got to see that's like the highs and the lows of the game. And, you know, it wasn't like a game-winning strikeout or anything, but it just shows that, you know, it's just one AB, it's just one at bat, one game, and I, you know, the sun came up the next day, and that's how it goes. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I would say the percentage on my, it varies every single year. There's some times where there's like, you know, four or five guys. Other years there's nobody. But we have like a baseball chapel every Sunday, which is in the clubhouse for like 15 minutes. So I go to that. It's probably like, you know, eight or nine guys go to this baseball chapel. And they have the baseball chapel is kind of an entire minor league thing, or in the big leagues, I think, too. But it kind of gets you a chance to just go in there for 15, 20 minutes and just kind of talk things out, you know, listen to a little message, kind of, you know, get you feeling right, get you kind of back on track for wherever you were, you know, before and then moving forward. So it also is nice too because you have a couple guys all together that you're like, okay, if we know every weekend that we're going to be going to this, or even last season we try to start a little Bible study during the week. It's just kind of difficult because, you know, during the you play every single night and you don't get back to the hotel or, you know, till 11:30 and guys are tired or whatever's going on. It just kind of, you can probably do it during the day, but we were just, everyone would sleep till about noon and then go to the ballpark at 1:30. So I guess I got to be better at that. That's another thing that I need to get better at for sure. So, yes, sir. Chicago White Sox. Yeah. So big leagues, AAA, AA. And I like to say that AAA and AA are almost interchangeable because you can get called up from AA, but more often than not, it's from AAA. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll just another thing, you know. It is what it is. You get another shot, go out there and make the most of it. So, yes, sir.
Why do baseball players spit so much?
That's a good question. I think that's probably the same thing as why do baseball players always grab their jock strap too. I don't know. I don't know the right answer to that. Maybe because it's the dip or the sunflower seeds or anything in between. I don't know. I can't even answer. I don't dip. I like the sunflower seeds and the gum. That's kind of my go-to. Well, his history should pretty much talk for itself. He's also a really nice guy, which, you know, my dad and I talked about when he was telling me that he would go to and sell sporting goods, he'd get a good chance to talk with the Colts and the Pacers. And, you know, you'd follow some of these guys on television, but then you find out the guy's actually a jerk, and you're like, well, I'm not as big of a fan as that guy anymore. But you can for sure bet Chris Sale's actually a genuinely good guy, too. So you can root for him on and off the field. On cheating as in like steroids and things like that, or are you referring to as like pine tar on the baseball because guilty gets charged? No, I would say definitely when it comes to cheating, performance enhancing wise, you know, guys still do it. It's pretty amazing how, you know, even with the regulations that they have and the pretty strict, how strictly they enforce it, guys still get caught, which is amazing to me how stupid you can be. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's, like I said, you have the right to do anything, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's beneficial for your career because one day you're gonna have to hang the spikes up, and I want to believe that does some actually like pretty biomedically bad things like for your body too when you're off of the steroids or whatever you're doing. But I've never taken anything like that, or I'd never anticipate doing that just because I value my integrity over. You know, the sport, I guess, or I value my integrity over my performance, if that makes sense. I'd rather be a good teammate than a good baseball player, if that makes sense, just because at the end of the day, like I said, the game is going to end. My party's going to be over, but it's the friendships that you make with teammates, with the guys from all over the country, all over the world that, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to make friends with and get to know. And so I think just being a good teammate's number one, and then being a good player is number two. So, yes, sir. I wish I was 19, but I'm 25. But I don't have a wife or any kids, so I'm playing the single man's game right now. So, yeah.
What do you envision yourself doing after baseball? What, 2 years, 10, 20 years?
That's a good question. I talk to my dad about this pretty often, actually, and. One of the things that I've done, I've gotten into a little bit, I've become pretty passionate about is real estate investing. And I think what I want to do is a lot of players in professional baseball, as you probably all know, every other night you see some guy go bankrupt or get divorced or something, some professional athlete did something stupid. And I would like to get into the minor league system and not necessarily teach people, but almost have like a course on how to show people how to be wise investors and use their money correctly, because so many guys get out of baseball and they don't know the first thing about money, or they don't know how taxes work, or they don't know anything like that. So, and I'm not an expert on anything, but it's something that is definitely, there's a need, because so many guys, first of all, don't make it to the big leagues, and then second of all, they don't stay long enough to make the millions of dollars that you see on television. So I think that's something that I would like to do. I haven't figured out the system on how to make that yet, but it's something that intrigued me for sure. Yes, sir. Well, back in 2012, I played in the College World Series when I was at Arkansas, and that's not the big leagues, but I mean, there was like 28,000 people there playing, or you know, watching us play, and walking into that stadium, that was about as big league as I've felt in my career so far. But minor league wise, I mean, I'd say Indianapolis is nice. Our Double A stadium in Birmingham was actually really sweet. I mean, it's probably the best Double A ballpark in all of Double A. So. Which is not saying much, because it's, you know, I'm still eating peanut butter and jelly, but it's still, you know, it's still nice. You get, you know, 6,000-7,000 people show up every night, and then on Thursday, you get about 9,000 people. So, I did back in like maybe my first year of college, and now I don't get nervous at all. I don't even like, it doesn't even faze me anymore, just because I've been there so many times. Practicing, I've been there so many times mentally over in my head. It's like almost second nature now. Like I just know exactly what I'm doing. I'm laser focused, and sometimes you don't even like notice what's going on. You just see the glove, and you just go. Yeah. So. Yes, sir. Well, pitch count is, you know, it's different for every organization, but the most important thing is they don't want you to tire out in August or, you know, July and August when, you know, you're feeling good for the first couple, 3 months of the season. But at the end of the day, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So if you can't even finish the season because you're so worn out from the first 4 months of the season, then, you know, that's what the whole plan is. They're just trying to space it out and make sure that you're able to finish the season, so. All right, one more, if anybody has any other ones. No? Yes, sir.
Grand Paul ever give you a discount on your baseball?
You know what? The discount that he gave me was I would go and pack football uniforms in the basement for the whole afternoon, and that was when he'd be like, oh, hey, Merry Christmas, here's a gift, a glove. But the thing is, I worked so hard for that because I knew, I was like, if I just pack, you know, 500 uniforms this summer, I can definitely get a new glove or whatever. So that was... Hey, the thing is, though, I enjoyed doing that, though. Whatever my grandpa asked me to do, I was there. I would do it. So, once again, guys, thank you for having me. I'm very thankful to be here. Not qualified whatsoever, but I'm very thankful to be up here and from my dad for asking me. So, thanks, gentlemen.